So now let's talk about the challenges that you faced courtesy COVID.
Oh,
A
yeah.
lot of your parts were supposed to come from China, and you were. And I'll just take a step back and congratulate you on the amazing Kickstarter campaign that you had, and a lot
Oh,
of
thank you.
pre-orders coming in, close to around $1.7 million of pre-orders, if I read your press statements correctly.
Yeah, 1.7, and then I don't know how public it is, but they people have continued to purchase. So there's a significant amount of purchases happened after the fact.
Yeah, great.
So if you go to the Kickstarter page, you can still buy.
What were the challenges that you faced because of COVID, and how are you managing the show?
Well, it's kind of multifaceted. It was very interesting. So we had our plan, and that's what we presented on Kickstarter. So by September of this year, we were supposed to have all the units out, and obviously, we haven't made that. Yeah, which is the joke with Kickstarter is no one ever delivers on time on Kickstarters, but we were really trying. So we had our whole plan. We were starting to execute against it. In December, we flew out and visited one of the factories, and we worked on some of the sub-assemblies. I don't know if I have one on my desk here. We worked with them on that. It was great. Like, all right, yeah, we're on track. The beginning of the year, there was like this kind of rumblings of like, there's this thing going on in China. Maybe travel will be disrupted, and we didn't think much of it. We continued working with our partner in Japan, and the manufacturing is going to happen in China. And we'd scheduled all our flights to go over to do the factory like tour and, initial bring up. And then all of a sudden everything just went downhill like so fast. Within a month, we were going to go after Chinese New Year. The factory wrote us, we're shut down. We don't know when we're going to open. And so we're sitting there like our eyes got really big, like, oh, what do we do? And so we just kept working on things and watching it very closely. And then things kept degrading worldwide. But after a few months, the factory says, okay, we have a plan. We're going to reopen, and this is how it's going to work. We're going to have a smaller crew. We're not going to have as many people. We're like, okay, that's good. But we still couldn't fly to China, the travel bans. So, like, okay, how do we deal with this? So, we found someone in China. We hired them. We started doing lots and lots of video conferencing. We trained them
Wow.
of what they needed to do in the factory. And then ship stuff over to our person in China. They'd go to the factory, they'd work with the factory, all of that. And so we got things rolling again. We still in the United States, because of COVID, we can't travel to China. So it's still pretty slow doing stuff like things that we could go over to and just kind of sit in the factory with them. And like, here's a circuit board out of this. Like, if there's a problem on the circuit board, I can just point to it and say, like, yeah, here, like that's broken, Let's go over to the soldering iron and re-solder that part, and let's fix it really quick. Now it's like, I'm trying to hold stuff up and point like, yeah, fix this piece. And they're not understanding. And then we have to like, maybe sometimes we have to FedEx or ship things to show them, which adds like a week. And so it's been a challenge. They're starting to build units now, which is exciting in a very small capacity. We've been delivering some units to some local, very early Kickstarter people that can, work with us. And if there's a problem, we can get the unit back and then look at it. And we've been shipping a lot of units to developers, which is important. So a lot of developers have been getting units and making games.
Wow.
So over the next couple quarters, we're gonna get the Kickstarter units out. It's highly variable right now. Like every time we think everything's going smooth, something happens and it adds half a week. But
Yeah.
it's
And
just everyone's facing this problem.
I hope your election results doesn't make it worse, or I hope it makes easier for you. Let's see.
I won't go into the politics, but there's a direction I want it to go, and
Yes. So let's hope it goes in the right direction. When people read the news that because I was reading a Forbes article today morning before I joined the call, wherein they talk about the investments that have come into the gaming industry and also into the tech industry. Your name comes up along with a few of the fitness startups and stuff like that. And when you look at the numbers, they all talk about $100 million, $500 million investment, and then suddenly Tilt5 comes up in the list with a $7.5 million yeah. dollar investment. When people look at that, they will think, oh, it's just a small amount, there's nothing great about it, or things like that. It's very interesting to know that it's a conscious decision from the people at Tilt5 in terms of deciding what is the amount that needs to come in. It also in one way shows that there are people out there in the market who are ready to invest money in your company. And you are still able to take the shots in terms of who should invest and how much money should come in.
Yeah, you know, it's, and again, I haven't said this publicly, you'll be the first to hear about it. It's like the fundraising process was really interesting. You know, I've been through the fundraising process a couple times, and, you know, COVID made it very interesting because we couldn't have as many face-to-face meetings. There were times when investors wanted to come take a look at the technology, so I'd have to, like, we had a glass conference room in our office. I'd go sanitize it, and I'd sanitize the glasses and the wand, and I'd set them all up, rub my hands with sanitizer, wearing the mask, and the investors would come through, and they would go off into the area, and they would do the demo, and I'd tell them how to do it, and I'd stand way back behind the glass, and they got to try it. And investors in the beginning of the COVID timeframe, we had intended to raise money because we had a schedule that we wanted to do to get content and just kind of get everything like going. And investors in the beginning of COVID slowed way down. Like all investments just came to a screeching halt. And so we didn't know what to make of that. I mean, we were okay. We could build the units. We just didn't know how we were going to get a lot of content on the system. And so we pulled back, we became very conservative. We just started having hundreds of conversations with various investors, just conversation after conversation after conversation, and no one was moving. So then come around summertime, then all of a sudden the investors start moving and they start approaching us like, yeah, we think this is a good deal. Let's talk about like the terms of the deal. And all of a sudden we found ourselves in a situation where we had more investors wanting to invest than we had decided we would go after, because we had learned our lesson at CastAR. There's a certain amount of money and that is associated with your plan. And if you take too much, that's going to be a problem. And it also, if you raise too much money, it makes your next fundraising more difficult. So if I raised $100 million today, you know, just the way it works, I have to raise a multiple of that. I may have to raise $300 or $400 million. It just becomes progressively harder and harder to raise money. So entrepreneurs, I would encourage them from my hard lessons I learned, only take as much as you want. Now, the effect of having so many investors and partners coming to us to invest, we got to be very picky about who came on board. And so we ended up in a situation this time, CastAR, we had one investor, one big investor. They had all the say, and they weren't necessarily additive to our business. This time we're like, who do we want? What's the composition of all the investors? And who do we say no to? And who do we say yes to? And so, you know, one of our investors is SIP Global Ventures. They have a mandate to bring technology to the Japanese markets. And we thought that was super additive. Wow. Like the Japanese market is really important and difficult to get into as a US-based company. We had a couple very video game specific companies, Bitcraft and Galaxy Interactive. Like these guys, you know, one company really understands esports, one really understands video games really well. Like this is really additive. We had Logitech, a big hardware manufacturer, come on board and invest. And they've been super helpful on the manufacturing side to give us advice and just be there for us. We had one of the co-founders of Valve Software. So there's a big twist, right? you know, the whole Valve Software thing. We had one of the people that was the original founding team of Valve Software came in and put a big chunk of money into the company. Like, that's really an additive thing as well. So I think we got a lot smarter this time. Plus, you know, now we have a plan. Like, this is the plan. This is what we're doing with the money. And like, all of them are understand it because they're familiar with the space. They've all agreed. And so now, knock on wood, nothing too bad goes. There's going to be problems. There always is. There's going to be something goes wrong. But this time we plan on, like, you know, we're going to execute on what we said we're going to do. And then eventually we'll probably raise more money, you know, which will be some step up.
Yes, I'm sure that you'll do that, and because you are better prepared, and you know the roller coaster ride that can that you may end up taking if there is a lot of money, and it's a great learning in terms of that too much money is also a challenge for startups, and I like the or rather it's a very interesting or apt point that if your first initial fundraising is very on a very higher side, then you're going to really struggle to get your next set of funds coming in. So that
was part of my problem at Cast AR. Like, we ended up in an awkward situation where we raised $15 million and we should have delivered our first consumer product on that, but we were running out of money because we were burning it too fast. And our next natural step up in funding should have been about $40 to $50 million at that point, if you just kind of do standard step ups. And so the VR market was in a depression. You know, there was a lot of like fear that no one was going to like augmented reality or virtual reality. And so no investors wanted to give us $40 million, especially if we were late shipping our product. So, oops.
Yeah, so that puts an added pressure on the team as well as in terms of delivering products. And then you may end up, the pressure can go either way. So it can work in the right manner, or maybe if it's too much pressure, it doesn't add up in the right way. And you may end up losing the focus of what needs to be actually brought into the market.
Yeah, you know, I should have known this kind of thing would have happened starting Cast AR, because I've worked at so many startups. I've worked at startups that have raised the $100 million, and I've worked at startups that have raised small amounts and done very pragmatic things and got acquired and had like really good outcomes. And I've seen it so many times externally, just being here in Silicon Valley, seeing companies raise $100-200 million and then being gone 12 months later. It just happens so often. Like, you just see it all the time. There's companies that go from $0 to $100 million and then they're gone in a year. And it's like, yep. You know, it's like, I can just imagine what happened.
And it's good to see that you are hardly spending any money on your PR. You're keeping it close and making sure that the money is going in the only in the right places, and you're not spending too much money on the PR.
I think that's something we learned just watching others in the industry. Like, you know, at the time of Cast AR, we were watching Magic Leap, for instance, spend ridiculous amounts of money on PR, and they weren't releasing a product, and it was super exaggerated, you know, CGI, just over the top. And then when they released their product finally, after Cast AR had died, and, you know, partly, you know, they're part of the contributing factor of why Cast AR had trouble raising money, then the product kind of is like, oh, it's not as magical as like all this PR that was like. And so that was kind of a lesson we watching the other guys. Like, you know, even Google and Facebook have like been guilty of this. Like, when Google Glass came out, you know, I remember their initial video for the Google Glass. They showed people like walking around the world with like augmentation everywhere, and someone learning to play a ukulele with a Google Glass. And like, the device can't even do that. It's like, and so we've been trying to keep it very realistic. Like, we solved this really tough problem really well, and it's going to be amazingly fun.
Yes. So you told that now that you want to keep the right basic level. So from a very normal board game or a normal member of a family who likes to play a card game or a game like Uno, is that something that is possible with Till 5?
Yeah. With our partners like Tabletopia, they cover, you know, super casual games all the way to super complicated. And it works around the table where you can play with all your friends, and also you can link game boards with their system.
Great. And you spoke about esports. One of the investors is into esports. E-gaming or esports, that was definitely going to boom at some point in time. But COVID has suddenly given them an extra space, and the market is booming in a significantly higher speed. You have
an interesting fact I just saw the other day about esports. This was surprised me. Here in the United States, esports is the second most watched sporting event now. Wow. It beats out everything except for our National Football League.
Amazing.
So that's how big it's getting. Esports is a very, very big thing. It surprises me, at least over here. You know, I don't think the kids get it. Like, all the kids are watching esports events. But probably people above the age of 35 don't quite get it yet, that esports is coming, and it's coming in a really big way.
Yes, and it's going to hit everyone really fast, because once you get a kick off it, I have seen people who have been hooked up to esports and they have not come out of that. And there are a lot of wonderful things that's happening around esports, and the interesting fact is that you know that it's a success, or it's going to grow, when a lot of international renowned brands who are not at all anywhere close to esports suddenly starts being part of esports, running to get investments and brand sponsorships, tie-ups done with esports. That definitely shows that there's a lot of noise happening in that market.
Yeah, there's a whole new trend in marketing too, and I'm no expert in this. I'm trying to learn. I've been reaching out to a lot of my mentors about it. But, you know, the old days of television advertisements and newspapers and magazines, brute force kind of advertisements is over. Like, all the modern savvy advertisers and companies advertising are going out and getting influencers and micro-influencers.
Yes.
And esports is a fantastic place to get these influencers, because some of these people have millions of loyal followers. Some of them have tens of thousands or thousands of followers. But as someone doing marketing, you know, if it doesn't cost much money, you know, you could get 100 micro influencers that have like accumulation of a million audience members. You can like incentivize them for very little money, and the message is very personal and it's like very direct.
Yes.
And it's completely changed the way marketing's
days. It's a completely different ball game with the influencer marketing coming in, which has been in the market, and people have started realizing about that in the last 3 to 4 years. Because I recently, not recently, say around 6 months back, I interviewed the founder of Upfluence, one of the leading...
I've heard of that.
Yeah, Subhiwan Garnas. So I spoke to him and I did a interview of him. And it was interesting to know that the way in which influencer marketing is helping brands to focus on their markets, and as you spoke, the micro influencers. So the talk of the town currently is that you should focus on micro influencers, and they will give you more results. The less you spend, and the more results you see out of that.
Yeah, it's neat, and you see it. Like you watch a YouTube video, and you just watch a bunch of YouTube videos. You start to see the micro influencer type people playing a bigger role. You know, and bigger brands are going to them too, which is pretty cool. And esports kind of plays along with that. It's kind of cool. I got a kind of an early taste of esports at Valve Software. So wow. They have a game called Dota. They were launching when I was there. So I got to be around when they did the Dota World Championships. And
Dota did a lot of noise during those days.
Yeah. I think they're still doing well. And it, at the time, internally, there were some notions about how they were going to make money on Dota. And in the end, it didn't turn out that they made money the same way as they expected. It ended up being the tournaments is where they made the majority of their money on Dota, which is kind of cool. I probably shouldn't go into all the details about it, but that was cool. But it was fun. I didn't like Dota, so I didn't play it even in the internal beta testing. But I did attend a bunch of the international tournaments while I was there. And not knowing much about the game, I was excited the entire time. I was in the amphitheater and watching the tournaments take place. And it was just super exciting. And then in Valve Hardware R&D, we did one of our first tests with augmented reality is we put Dota on the table with an augmented reality system. And that's when I got sold on the idea that esports on the table in front of you is the way that you're going to view esports in the future. So when you watch, say, Dota is kind of like American football with two sides and you're trying to get a goal, basically. It's the best way I can describe it. So two teams. And when you watch it on the stream, the streamer that's announcing it is only zoomed in on one little piece of this big map. And, mostly the action is happening in one place, but strategies are happening off in the corners that you don't realize. People are sneaking around in different ways to attack. And when you look at this in AR, you get to see the whole map laid out in front of you. And so you can be watching something off over here to the side where all the main action is, but in the corner of your eye, you see someone kind of moving around over there and you look, you're like, oh. So there's a situational awareness that you get with augmented reality esports that you don't get on a flat screen and you don't get when an announcer is just showing you one part of the map.
I'm sure that Tilt 5 is going to do some wonders in esports arena as well.
Yeah.
So what are the immediate plans currently? What are the plans for Tilt 5?
Our biggest plan is to make sure that we get a lot of content on the system. That's our next phase. We're shipping glasses as soon as, everything lines up with the factory, which should be, any day now. It's not going to be any, people always ask like when it's going to ship. Like we're intentionally not telling you an exact date because, our goal is to get a few out this year and then get the bulk of them, shortly out in, after that. But that changes on a daily basis.
Yeah, I can understand that.
And then content. Just as many games, work with as many developers as possible. Just make it so there's just a bazillion things you can do with the system because that's going to be the key to our success and the fun for everybody.
Yeah. So there will be a lot of small-time developers, game developers, especially game developers, who would like to reach out and say that, hey, I've got made something. Do you want to take a look at it? So how do they reach out to you?
Right on our website, there's an email you can address. You can reach out to us. On spacing it for a second. You can find it on our website. You can reach out to us and we're pretty responsive on any channel that you reach out to us. You can even tweet to us. We're always watching on Twitter even.
I know that. I know about the responsive part. So any person who doesn't have much of a background, even if he's passionate about whatever the development he's doing, he or she's doing, they want to reach out to you, definitely they will get a response. I am sure about that.
We're super excited about the small time developer. We've seen it in the virtual reality space. I've seen it in other industries, like even phones when they came out. It's, you have big companies, right? And they have really great content. And that big companies will come to our system and we're talking to some big companies too. But the real innovation in new platforms always comes from the small guys. They're fearless. They go out and they try a bunch of things and they discover like the gameplay mechanics that are just insanely fun. you know, and out of these like new emerging markets, you know, like cell phones, when they came about, that's where a bunch of these big players have shown up. They didn't even exist 15 years ago, but it's because they were small and experimented on this new platform. They became huge.
That's true. That's true. I'll touch upon a very small point wherein you said that I would put it in a different manner, because now whatever you said, that if you are small, I'll just add to that, if you are small and young, you are more fearless and you try to do a lot of things. I will touch upon a very small thing that I missed out in the start of the session. You started off riding your bicycle and testing your radios, on hand-built radios, when you were really young. Tell me about that.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's, you know, if we rewind all the way back to when I was just a kid, and this is maybe even foundational of like why I'm an inventor and, you know, competitive even today. So I got into doing electronics. I lived out on a farm in the middle of nowhere, and I just liked working with electronics. And there were these little kits you could get, and you could build little projects, and they're fun. And my neighbor up the road, he lived a mile or so up the road, I got to know him, and he was also into electronics, and he built a little AM radio transmitter, and it couldn't transmit very far, but he could broadcast radio. And that was kind of cool and exciting, like being able to broadcast like music or my voice over the air. And so I worked with him and I built a little transmitter, and it didn't transmit very far, but we would build these little transmitters and we would ride our bicycles and we'd count phone poles, because out in our area, the telephone lines were up on wooden poles. And we would count the number of phone poles away from our homes that our transmitter would transmit. And then we'd go off for a week or two and we'd improve our little transmitter and get smarter about working with electronics, and the transmission range would go a little further. And we were having competitions like who could transmit the furthest, and we'd go further and further and further. And it was really, really fun. And it became this kind of a war between us. You know, he would go 2 miles and then I would go 3 miles. And then he would switch to a bigger transistor and he'd go 5 miles. And then I got an old vacuum tube radio and took it apart, and I used the vacuum tube so I could put out more power. And this is all kind of slightly illegal. You're not supposed to transmit on the AM radio band that far. You can transmit a little ways, but you can't transmit miles. But we got to where we were on the AM transmitting band, we would ride our bicycle and we'd just ride for like so long, like all afternoon. We couldn't reach the end of our transmission. And we switched from the AM broadcast band, which is fairly easy to get some distance out of it, to the FM band. And then we started building FM transmitters, which were more complicated. And then we started doing the same thing. But, you know, the one thing is like, you know, maybe this is a lesson that I learned, is always try to have an unfair advantage if possible. I found that, you know, the antenna that I built was just a wire that came off the circuit and I just put it out my window. Outside my window was where the phone wires came in. So I found if I wrapped my antenna around the phone wires, it would go up the phone lines and it would follow the phone lines. And I've talked to him recently. He now owns a series of TV stations, or a chain of TV stations and radio stations in Oregon. So he actually went on to be a broadcaster. He never really knew why. It was kind of funny, like my signal would get really loud every time you got near the phone poles, because the wire would drop down the phone pole, and he never knew why my radio station was always louder. And like, we'd get to the end and like his would still be transmitting and be like, just one more phone pole, I'm sure my signal will come back. And I'd ride up and get close to the phone pole and like, there it is, you can hear it. It was a great hobby. Yeah. Even today, I still, recently I got into amateur radio. It's super fun. You get these transmitters and receivers and you can do all kinds of things with them. And there's these certain frequencies that you can transmit on as an a licensed amateur radio operator. And some of these don't travel very far, like FM. They're kind of FM and they don't travel far. And it's kind of fun. You can do some things like, how far can I get my little FM amateur radio to go? And then there's these other like frequencies, like the shortwave radio frequencies that we can transmit on, which are super exotic and weird. So there's things like, as the sun is going down, it ionizes the atmosphere just perfectly, and your radio waves can like strike the atmosphere and bounce.
Wow.
And you have these little short windows where you can talk to people like across the world just for like 10 minutes. Like it just bounces just right. Or there's other things where there's these, you can do digital transmissions on these too. So you can hook it up to your computer and you can do these transmissions where you can do a thing called meteor scatter. So when there's a meteor storm and these shooting stars are going into the atmosphere, it ionizes the atmosphere and you can do these short data bursts that hit the ionized atmosphere and it can bounce really far away. And you have wow. people with computers hooked up to their radios listening for it. And the transmissions are very short because a shooting star meteor only goes through the atmosphere for 10 seconds or something.
Yeah, right.
So it's thrilling and exciting. It's kind of like when I was a kid, like, how far can I go? And like, who can hear me and who can I hear? And
amazing, amazing. So I would say that I will wind up another 5 minutes.
We've been on here 3 hours.
Yeah. because it was interesting to talk. To summarize everything, the journey that you have started from right from when you're a kid making radios, and then from there, putting your hands on everything that is possible. If you ask me, that you have done almost anything that's been possible in a span of the last 20 to 30 years. You have done radios, you have done dirt car racing, you have set up computer shops. Then you have been the, I would call you are one of the pioneers in augmented reality. And now you are setting a base or a startup which is completely focused on augmented reality. And I hope Tilt5 moves takes the next leap from gaming to the other industries which can actually get benefited by augmented reality.
Yeah, I think augmented reality, and thank you. I'm very humbled that you're, you know, kind of recognize that that I've done a bunch of things. Like, you know, I've kind of always like thought, like, I don't want to be on my deathbed and regret that I didn't try to do something. Right. I try a bunch of things. I mess up sometimes and I try, and I'm really humbled that you recognize that. Yeah, I think that in the augmented reality and mixed reality space, we're kind of at the kind of same point where home computers were in the 1970s. Like everyone that looked at home computers back then recognized, like, this is really going to change things. You know, Steve Jobs said something like, it's the bicycle of the mind. And he had like, he was trying to find ways to describe how the computer is going to like change it. And like, they just didn't have the words to describe it, but they just knew it was coming and it just grew small. And, you know, a lot of companies came and went and a lot of ideas came and went, and that's just the nature of it. And it's fun. It's like all of us that are on these, like the fringe, figuring it out, figuring out the words to describe it. You know, hopefully someday someone will look back and be like making fun of us, of like, haha, that Tilt 5 company, like trying to say like it's the best of video games and board games mixed together. That's so silly. Everyone knows that it was the merging of wooden tables and incandescent lamps. Silly people. Or I don't know, you know, you can't predict what it's
yes. Since you touched upon Steve Jobs, one of his conferences, I think he mentioned that it's important to stay hungry and stay foolish. And I think you fit that bill in the right way in terms of staying hungry and staying foolish, literally as well as in a business scenario as well. So I think you have picked up the right pieces from wherever you could, and you have now put together a great
That's a good point. It's hungry is always a way to, a great way to describe it. Like, I just have this insatiable desire to, like, please, people that I work with, or please the customers. You know, as I did my computer stores, I always wanted to do right by the customers. I always wanted to go the extra mile. That's why we were so popular. Like, we would go to people's homes and help them out. My engineering career, I always tried to go above and beyond whenever I could. And I was always trying to be super helpful. And when I got into doing consumer products like toys, I always wanted to, like, and again, people taught me this. I didn't just learn this on my own, but, I wanted to understand my audience if it was a kid's toy. Like, one of my mentors in the toy industry, like, I, typical engineer, I came to him with a toy design. He's like, this is a typical toy that an engineer would make. He's like, go home, get some Legos and play and pretend that you're a 12-year-old kid and come back to me with a toy design that's like what a kid would want. Like, a humbling moment in my life. Like, I was dumb. Like, I made a neat gadget that a nerd would like, but not a 12-year-old kid. But I'm always hungry for that. And, like, that's kind of how we work in Tilt 5. We're always trying to, like, delight the end user the best we can. And it's fun.
Amazing. I would wish all the best to Tilt 5. And I hope the next interview we will do on a Tilt 5 platform with some
of the graphic
glasses. It will be fun. And it may be the next big thing that can happen for a podcast or a YouTubing industry, in terms of when people are now covering a lot of interviews and people are not able to travel as well. So it'll be great fun to interview people with the augmented reality glasses.
We should be able to do that by this time next year. Like, one of our plans is part of our SDK, we want to make it really easy for people to add a webcam to their experience. So you can have a webcam sitting off to the side on a tripod. And since we have the game board, it's the perfect space that we can, like, do video compositing, so we can live stream it. Plus, we could also, be communicating. Maybe we'll do that sandbox thing together. We'll talk business while pushing sand around.
Yes, that will be fun. That will be fun. Yes, actually. I'll just put together a final line before I can chat offline after that. Thank you, Jerry, for taking out time it's quite late in the midnight, taking out time and talking about your journey, very inspirational journey, great work that you're doing around Tilt 5 and augmented reality. There are a lot of people who look up to Jerry Ellsworth and the work that's happening around augmented reality. I hope the kids to whom you have given the trophies during your car racing days would have looked up to you in a very motivational sense.
Every once in a while I get this, like, heartwarming email. It's just so special. Like, folks that... It's just something I've done is, like, encourage them to go off and do something. I would have never imagined, and I don't necessarily seek to do that. It just happens, but it just really makes me happy when someone drops me an email and says, like, hey, you came and spoke at my school, or I saw you at this event and I decided to go do something brave and yes, it worked out.
So I think it's about giving it back to the society in terms of the way in which the insurance seller across your road came up to you and helped you, and the Atari founder called you and pushed you to do things different. Similarly, you do your own small parts in terms of giving it back to the society and pushing the next generation to push themselves to the...
I think that's a risk. Responsibility for all of us, really. Something's really humbling, and I take pause and think about this often, is quite a few of my mentors throughout the years, some of the folks the amateur radio operators when I was a kid that was teaching me about electronics and helped me make transmitters. And, you know, some of those people have passed away. You know, the machinist that I used to work with that taught me how to weld and build my first race car, you know, I went to his shop on the weekends and worked for free to learn how to weld. Well, he's passed away, you know. I don't even think some of these people that have helped me throughout my career even realize like the spark that they lit. You know, I don't know if Nolan Bushnell is ever going to hear me talk about like he was the one that inspired me to get Tilt 5 going. Like first, you know, he may never know, right? But, you know, as people, we should like be lighting those little fires. And
yes. And I hope the spark continues at Tilt 5 and definitely. The spark gets spread to other people and other areas of work as well. And a lot of inspiration comes out from this. So all the best to Tilt 5 and the team behind Tilt 5. I'm sure that that's a big, huge team that's doing a lot of hard work and putting together this stuff. So all the best to them as well.
We're incredibly small. We're so small. Our team's so small. That's the fun of a startup. But yeah, thank you very much. Yeah.